My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to Inside United. Today our guest is Gary Petty. In our last episode, we began our discussion on spiritual and emotional traps in dealing with conflict. This discussion is based on his latest book, The Mercy Effect. In this episode, we continue the discussion on emotions. I begin by asking Gary about unresolved feelings and how they can lead to bitterness.
Yeah, bitterness is anger on steroids, and it eats away at us. I mentioned in the book a situation that I'll never forget. This man was just destroyed. He never smiled. He could never be happy. This was at the beginning of the book. And one day I went to him and I said, "What's wrong?" I mean, even socially, he wouldn't interact with people anymore. And I'd seen him go through this change. And what happened was an authority figure had betrayed him. And I really had. And he really looked up to this person. Then the authority figure died. And he said, "I can't solve this. I can't go to him and make him apologize. I can't work it out." And he said, "It's like he's reaching up out of the grave and controlling my life." That's what bitterness does. It allows other people to control who we are, even though they may not be around us. They may not even care for us. Or they may actually be the type of person who would change if we would let them know. But it doesn't matter. That bitterness sits inside and it becomes part of our very being. Bitterness isn't an obsession. If you train your brain to think a certain way, it's what happens. I mean, you know, some people say, "Well, I get up in the morning and the first thing I think about is how my husband does this." Okay, they're now obsessed. Bitterness is part of who they are. Their brain finds those memories. They're so strong, finds the emotions because it's there and just keeps repeating them over and over again. And that's the great problem with bitterness. It destroys all of our other relationships.
And so how do we counter it? How about some how-tos?
In the book of Hebrews, it says, "Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. And look carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God. Lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, by this many have become defiled." I believe the only real solution to bitterness at a certain point is God. I think we have to go to God and we have to pour out our bitterness. Because what happens is bitterness, once it becomes part of our emotional makeup, it poisons everything. Mm-hmm. If you're bitter about somebody and it's on your mind all the time, and you go out, you know, you say with some friends to a great restaurant and it's a great steak and it's your favorite meal and you don't enjoy a bite because all you can really think about is this person. Mm-hmm. And it's a poison that eats us up. There's a point with bitterness, I think we literally have to go to God and say, "I have a root of bitterness," and you have to pull that out. You have to rip it out. You know, I mean, there's some therapy people can go through to help them with bitterness and teaches them how to process their emotions. But I think as a Christian, the only way to actually get rid of bitterness is to go to God. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote this book was because of my life. I feared, could I become bitter with unresolved conflict, or people aren't acting the way I want them to? You know, so sometimes it's just control. We just think we need control over everything. But, in working through that process, I decided, you know, I could become bitter. And I use the example in the book of Viktor Frankl, who, of course, is a famous example. But after going through the concentration camps as a psychologist and going through the Nazi concentration camps, he came out and created a new kind of psychology, which is a fascinating thing that he did. And one of the things I found fascinating was his concept that the Nazis who committed the crimes needed to be punished. I mean, that's the law. So you do these monstrous things, you need to
pay up.
Yeah. But you can't make every German pay, because each individual has to be judged. Therefore, because he knew people now that just hated Germans. And he said, you can't hate all Germans. You can desire and request justice, but if you hate an entire race of people, that's a bitterness that'll eat you up inside. And the fact that he went through that and was able to articulate that and teach people who came out of the Holocaust, no, you can't hate everybody. You know, you have to understand that justice is justice and people are people. People do a lot of wrong things, but you can't be bitter. Bitterness destroys the core of who you are. And all of us could be, it's so easily to fall into. And it doesn't take a major thing. You don't have to be thrown into a concentration camp to become bitter. It could just be your husband isn't very attentive or something. You know what I mean? It could be something that seems small compared to the other, but it can eat away at a person. I think there's a point where Christians, we actually have to go to God and say, restore me to you, the joy of your salvation. And remove this bitterness from me.
You know, Gary, this brings up a story. I know this is your interview here, but I think this will illustrate something too. I had a person who was a deacon in a church that I pastored one time, and he was the most mild, loving person that I had ever known. And one time in a very, very personal conversation, because we were over to their home a lot, he talked about his background. He talked about his dad. He talked about his dad being a very violent person who would react very, very quickly and get very angry, and that his anger would go out of control. And he said he vowed, if you could put that term, to himself, I will never allow myself to go over this line of anger, of being out of control emotionally, because I know that I won't be able to stop. I'll go to a point of where I'll say irresponsible things. And so he said that I see things happening, I see things building to where it's either at work or with my wife, whatever, that could cause me to lash out. And I don't ever allow it. He said, that's the way I've been able to control it all my life. I thought that was a very interesting observation.
I always suggest the book Emotional Intelligence. Part of it is a study of how the brain works. And they found out that there's a lot of Freudian psychology and so forth, it's not true. It's not how the brain actually works. And we can program our brain to each, we can actually program our brains to become mentally ill. And part of it is what we dwell on. There's another book that I actually use when people come in to talk to me about these things. It's called You Are What You Think by Dr. Stoop. I have a stack of those books in my office all the time, and I'm handing them out all the time. You are what you think. So the scripture tells us how to think. And so when we do that, when we use scripture to tell us how to think, then God can uproot bitterness. He can take it out of us. But we need healing. Bitterness takes healing from God.
It's even spoken of as a root of bitterness.
That's right. And it will feed it. If we're not careful, we'll feed it.
And actually, you're talking about programming our brain. You know, conversion is programming.
God, that's right. God reprograms us.
Reprograms us, you know, and we need to apply that godly emotional intelligence to what we have.
Yes.
Okay, let's move on to the next of the spiritual traps in conflict, and that is, when you get to a point of certain bitterness, it's overflowing you, you want to involve others in your discontent.
And once again, this is so normal. And all of us need somebody to talk to. I mean, a friend. But you know, if you have a good friend and you're just going to get together to tear down somebody else, the good friend's going to say, you can't do this. You know, it's like husbands and wives. I've seen them do this. The man has his friends, she has her friends. And pretty soon you have two groups of people who are against the other person because they've been programmed now by the husband and wife to be against their mate. And you have sides. Everybody's on sides. When somebody needs to sit down and tell both of them, no, you're both wrong here. But we have this need. It's sort of, it makes us feel like my pain is justified because other people also see it. Now, once again, you know, if you've been abused, if you've been through certain experiences, sharing that is, you need to do that. But we have to be very careful why we do it. If we're seeking understanding and healing, that's one thing. If we're seeking our mob, the form, to go against the mob on the other side, then we can actually destroy other people's relationships. In fact, once we begin to seek to keep getting more people on our side, there's a lot of collateral damage. Other people's relationships get damaged. So we have to be very careful about who we share our conflicts with other people's with, what kind of advice we take from them, and not just get to the point where, good, I got 15 people agreeing with me and he has only five, so Mm-hmm. I must be right, you know.
And as far as truth is concerned, you find that the information that's shared is very selective.
Yes.
The information is everything that benefits your particular cause and may grossly overlook things that you may have done to bring it about or contribute to the situation.
Yes.
Well, I think that we all, especially in the ministry, have people come to us that present various versions of what they have. And I find the most skillful people among the mediators, so the ones that bring reconciliations, are the ones that be very careful as to how they process the information and what they share between the parties.
One of the things that happens too, we have to be careful about, if we're obsessed with it or we're bitter and we're just sharing it. That's not the thing about a bitter person. They got to share it. They got to share it. How many times have we seen this in counseling where a person's abused and then you get to know the abuser and they were abused? Mm-hmm. The more we obsess on what's happened to us, the more we can become the very thing that we hate, the very thing that was done to us. Mm-hmm. The story you brought out of the man who said, I'm not going to be that way. We actually have to decide, I'm not going to be that way. I'm not going to share this with others because I'm not going to think about it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let go what happened because I can't fix it. And I think that's where a lot of this, there's certain things we can't fix. What if the person never apologizes? What if the person doesn't care? What if the person just is can't accept it? And so they just will never accept that what they did was wrong. And you see that sometimes with people who are sexually abused, who want to go back. They know their father's dying and they want to go back and amend something before the father dies. And sometimes the father will, and sometimes he won't. And they have to learn to let it go, or he'll die and they'll carry that. They have to learn to say, he just won't accept what happened. I know the truth, but I've grown beyond that. I've mm-hmm. grown into, you know, that doesn't determine who I am. When we let abuse determine who we are, we're in danger of becoming an abuser ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of part of this. We share this with others.
Well, actually, that leads us to the final point here, which is viewing life as a victim.
Once again, this is so easy because I have been mistreated. I'm a victim. Most people who are very emotionally healthy, they've also been mistreated along the way by somebody. Everybody's mistreated. Everybody's been the mistreater and the mistreated. We all mm-hmm. have been on both sides of that coin. Mm-hmm. When you look at the idea of a victim, it's the easy way out. It's a very non-Christian and very, when you get down to it, it's letting your emotions control you. It's a lazy way to deal with yourself. And I mentioned in here, Happiness is a Serious Problem by Dennis Prager. I love the title of the book. You know, I don't always agree with everything in the book, but it's a great book that he looks at happiness as a moral imperative. God says, I created you to be happy. So we're to try to be happy. And he even goes as far to say, so when you're not happy, but you're around somebody else, you have the moral right to be happy around them, you know, mm-hmm. because you try to influence people in a positive way. That doesn't mean you don't acknowledge your unhappiness. It just means, why drag another person? You go talk to somebody about your unhappiness that can help you mm-hmm. instead of dragging other people into the pit. But in his book, he has, here's the reasons why we become victims. One is, it's easier to blame others than to confront life and oneself. We don't want to confront life and we don't want to confront ourselves. I'm a victim. I'm the poor person here. I want everybody to feel bad for me. My mother had a way of dealing with that when we were little kids. She mm-hmm. would just very calmly gather all the children around and say, Gary is having a hard time, so let's have a pity party for him. And everybody would pretend to cry. And he'd be like, stop that. I don't want, you know.
Makes you more upset.
It makes you more upset. But she'd say, come on, you're just feeling pity for yourself. Okay, something bad happened. You know, you're just going to have to grow up. But in my mind, even the instructions, you know, at first it'd be madder because she said it. But then the instruction was, see, look, if you're going to feel this way, you're going to feel this way all the time. The second reason is victims get sympathy. And sometimes we want the sympathy. We don't want to be the empathetic person who gives sympathy to others.
Be the responsible.
We don't want to be the responsible. And it all comes down to taking responsibility. It is easier not to take control of your life. You know, it's just easier to be the victim and not get out of the situation you're in. I'm going to stay in this situation because I'm a victim. Mm-hmm. It's also, self-pity is addictive, very addictive. And his last point, it's hard to mature. It is a mature person and a mature Christian who gets to the point where, okay, I'm not a victim. Well, I am a victim, but that's not the point. Because, you know, in reality, we're all victims of Satan. Mm-hmm. Every one of us has been victimized by Satan. We can't stay there. God has called us to come out of that. He says, stop it. Get away from your abuser. Get away from the person or the being who has victimized you and get out of that. Come to me and I will heal you from that, and you can help others. So we live in a very strange world in the United States, and part of it's because we have so much wealth, and things have been so good that you know, you see people who come from a wealthy family, young people, not just young people, older people. They come from a wealthy family. Everything's been good in their lives, and yet they feel like a victim. And it's like, most people would love to have what you have, you know, be what you've been, but they're still the victim. They're always the victim. And that's because they don't want to mature. A mature person sees the things that are happening and responds to them in a proper way, and which is, no, you can't make me a victim. Mm-hmm. You've done this to me. It hurts me. It makes me angry. It's wrong. But you can't make me a victim. And that's what you see in the Bible, where the people, you see Daniel, you see Paul, you see Peter, you see these people standing up to people who may kill them. And the response is, no, I do what God wants me to do. I do what he has me to do. And you can't make me a victim. You can kill me, but you can't make me think like a victim.
These are normal things that occur in day-to-day life combat. That it's best not to make the other person feel like you've been victimized, but stand up, continue doing what's right, reach out to these people. And I feel overall the results are good for all sides.
Yes.
For the people doing the talking, and also the people who are hurt. As, especially in our work in the ministry, we're to be servants. We're the ones who enable the good behavior.
I've had friends, my wife's done that. I mean, I just basically, okay, you've been knocked down. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You're going to stay down? And we all need somebody every once in a while to say, okay, you got knocked down. It hurts. Now what are you going to do? You're going to stay down there, or you're going to get up? Mm-hmm. And make us get up so we don't stay a victim.
Thank you for joining us on Inside United. This was our continued discussion on emotions with Gary Petty. You can find the first part of our discussion in our archives. When you're there, you can check out all of our past episodes as well. Tell your friends about us. You can find us on ucg.org under the podcast tab. You can find us on your favorite podcast app on iOS and Android. You can also find us on Spotify. Be sure to write to us at podcast@ucg.org. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.